Thanks, Ken, for that reading. That'll be a progressive reading. I didn't have him stop short, so we're not going to go any far. This series of lessons is going to go 4 Sundays, and so the rest of Genesis will get read in succeeding Sunday evenings. We're looking at the subject of, as I put it here, the pseudo or false science of evolution and the consequences of atheism. It's kind of light on Scripture. It's meant to be something that you can give to someone. It starts off right away with trying to tear down this foundation of evolution, because most people just accept it, and it's an easy way to trash anything about God. And so I've tried to mix it in such a way that it's, you know, kind of progressive and hits right to the heart of the matter, that hopefully, you know, somebody will want to listen to this as we get into it. I do provide this scripture, though, from the very beginning, Isaiah 1:18, where through the prophet God says, "Come now, let us reason together." You've got no fear of this, because, you know, God is very reasonable. He designed us and gave us the ability to reason, and he appeals to it often through the scriptures. And this is what we want to do with people eventually, if we can set them down. But to the opposite effect, let's go and see what atheism or evolution has to offer. And I've put the first section in here as being unreasonable. Okay? One of the present tactics of atheists is to mock the concept of religion. And in some cases, they got good reason for it. This is why our job is to get to what the true gospel is and what God's wisdom is. And specifically, the intelligent design of the universe is mocked, that's creationism, as being unreasonable. Now, while they try to present evolution as the science of thinking men. Okay, now, this thing's flawed from the very beginning. Okay, this is incongruous with what Charles Darwin's belief that evolution was unreasonable. I mean, old Chuck thought that way. Okay, notice. He wrote in his autobiography, this is closer to the end of his life. I mean, Origin of the Species was written, as we'll show you in the back cover, when he was in his 20s. Early in his 20s. Okay, now at the end of his life, close to it, his autobiography, he wrote that his taking things to their natural conclusion, that is, thinking things out, led him to believe in God. So he began to suspect that his ability to reason was flawed if it developed from the lower animals. I mean, this is our great thinker of the time. I mean, this is the way they present him as the man who's influenced thinking most, within the last century or so. If it was developed from lower animals. Here it is in his own words from his autobiography. I've got a copy. That's where I got all this stuff from. W.W. Norton, paperback edition, pages 92 through 93. Read with me. "Another source of conviction in the existence of God." This is Darwin speaking. "Connected with the reason and not with the feelings, impresses me as having much more weight. This follows from the extreme difficulty, or rather the impossibility, of conceiving this immense and wonderful universe, including man with his capacity to look far backwards and far into the future." This is something animals don't do. Man only has the imagination to do this. And he says, "to look at that as something that is a result of blind chance or necessity." You couldn't buy that rationally. "When thus reflecting, I feel compelled to look to a first cause," notice compelled by his reason, "to look to a first cause having an intelligent mind, in some degree analogous to that of man, and I deserve to be called a theist," that is, someone who believes in God. "However, this conclusion was strong in my mind about the time, as far as I can remember, when I wrote The Origin of the Species. And it is since that time that is very gradually, with many fluctuations, become weaker. But then arises the doubt, can the mind of man, which has, as I fully believe, been developed from a mind as low as that possessed by the lowest animal, be trusted when it draws such grand conclusions? That is, if my brain came from something that doesn't have the ability to really reason, how do I know that it's fully developed to be really rational?" Now, we might go along with that because the way he's thinking. I mean, reasonably, this is what he came up with. Now, Darwin, in his introduction to Origin of the Species, also writes, I am well aware that scarcely... Now, when he wrote this, as his introduction to his The Book That Proves All, okay, I am well aware that scarcely a single point is discussed in this volume on which facts cannot be adduced, often apparently leading to conclusion directly opposite to those at which I've arrived. In other words, the facts that he does present are so weak, any side can use them, which means that they're not good argument facts at all. But this is what the whole book is full of. Okay? Now, here was his hope. Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain. You know, what he's saying is, as geology, as he looked at it at the time, the science of the time, the fossils didn't go along with what he was proposing. Okay. Even with time, and this is the problem, it still doesn't, a century later. I ran into one of the friends I worked with. He was a scientific illustrator. He used to go to the museums and make the drawings. In fact, they let him down in the basement. And we were talking, and his argument was, well, he says, what you see up there, you know, on the first floor, is just a few of the bones. He said, you wouldn't, you know, couldn't imagine how many bones they have stocked away in the basement. Okay? And I go, okay, I just ask a simple question. Is any of them transition bones from one species to another? I got that same silence. Like I'm mimicking it. I mean, I can see his eyes, you know, his brain working, his eyes glaze over, and it kind of dawned on him of all the things he'd seen. There's no transition skeleton. There still isn't. Still isn't. Okay. So Darwin was hoping the geological record, as it developed, would eventually prove him right. Never did. Never did. This perhaps is the most obvious and serious objection which can be argued against this theory. If that's the objection, it's still valid, even more so. Okay? The explanation lies, I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record. It's still imperfect. Right? Now, Darwin had hoped that with time the geological record would prove him right, but unfortunately, over a century later, he has not been vindicated. He wrote Origin of the Species in 1859, but in a letter to J.D. Hooker in 1869, just 10 years later, he noted, if I live 20 more years and was able to work, how I should have to modify the origin and how much the views on all points will have to be modified. Well, it's a beginning or a start. So even as he's looking at his book, yeah, he's going, man, it really needs some serious rework. Because just about everything in it is really lame. Okay? Now, that's the author's conclusion. You know, you talk to a scientist now, and they go, oh, no, it's the greatest thing that came down since the Bible. Okay, further, Richard Dawkins, one of the most vocal proponents of atheistic fundamentalism, and the denial of the divine, admitted in an interview with Ben Stein, I got this, you know, Rob recommended to see the movie Expelled, so he loaned me his copy. I had to go out and buy it. Yeah, it's good stuff because it's interviews by Ben Stein. You know who he is. Okay, he interviews, first of all these guys that are credible scientists that either got kicked off of faculties, you know, or fired from jobs or whatever because they're creationists. But the final interview is with Richard Dawkins. And as he's talking to Dawkins, Dawkins kind of lets loose that, yeah, I believe in intelligent design. And I mean, right at that point, Stein goes, what? Yeah, would you say that again for the record? Dawkins goes, I believe in intelligent design. Oh, really? And unfortunately, what he attributed to was aliens. Okay. Very rational, okay. Dawkins, okay, you believe intelligent design comes from aliens. Where did the aliens come from? Evolutionists think in a box. You know, they don't go, yeah, I mean, to give Darwin his due, he thought, you know, beyond the box, you know, let's go back to the very beginning and look at things, or take it to its natural conclusion. And whenever Darwin did that, he came up with God. So he squelched his ability to do that. But scientists are still boxing themselves up. In fact, reading Asimov on physics, you know, he talks about the Big Bang Theory. You start with this cosmic egg, and at some point it blew up, you know, and you know, the universe is still expanding, and Hubble's redshift, you know, shows that it's still an expanding universe. But then he goes, now, if you ask me where the egg came from, I'll have to defer you to your religion. Okay. Now, these scientists that have this faith in evolution, they're unfaithful to it, or their own science. Okay, notice. Professor G.A. Kirkut of the Department of Physiology and Biochemistry, University of Southampton, his book, Implications of Evolution, and that was written in the 60s. I had to send away to England to get it. Describes the present-day undergraduate in science. What he does is he sits on the board of budding young scientists that they want their degrees, and so they have to go through an oral with examination by him. And so he goes, what's the proof of evolution? By the way, he is, you know, an evolutionist himself. And so he asks him, what's the proof of evolution? He said, barrel, but they sit back smugly and go, oh, Darwin proved it in The Origin of the Species. And that's what ticks him off. Yeah, because he's read it. he describes the present-day undergraduate in science as having to have faith in theories that he only dimly follows and will call upon various authorities to support what he does not understand. In fact, he says, in this, he differs not one bit from the irrational theology student of a bygone age. Okay, Kirkut is himself, and he describes evolution as a religion. This is one of the reasons why I have to argue against it. And lists seven assumptions or articles that the scientists must take on faith. Notice, there are such big monumental jumps in the theory that you really got, actually, you're required to have more of a faith than God requires of you to follow into this stuff. Yeah. First of all, he says that you have to buy into is that non-living things give rise to living matter. Now, if you put a label to it, it's called, really, first it was called spontaneous generation. Okay, when it first came out, science was in its infancy, and somebody had noticed some rotten meat left on, you know, somebody left a hamburger or something like that, or a steak on a, you know, lab table, and they came in the next morning and they saw flies on it. So they go, oh, we have life from dead matter. You know, it just you know, developed. Yeah, and it took a little while before they realized, no, the flies were laying eggs on the meat. You know, they were hatching, and the little flies were coming out of it. You know, you don't get life from, you know, non-life. Yeah. So that whole theory was trashed as being unbelievable until modern science comes along and relabels it punctuated equilibrium. Remember, the fossil record doesn't show you spit. Okay, so what they do is, okay, you've got a species that goes along for a while. And a lot of times the instructors will use one of those little crickets. And they go click, click, you know, species, click, click, new species. That's why there's no transition skeletons. They just right out of thin air. Now, not only do you not have those transitional skeletons from one species to another, you don't have all those skeletons where evolution went click, click, and you had this weird thing, you know, that's a missing link that goes, you know, that's just a mutated alien. You know, there should be billions of those in the Earth, you know, where evolution just took a wrong turn, you know, and ended up on a dead end. Where's all that? Most fossils you find are completed species that actually lived and breathed and, you know, reproduced for, you know, thousands of years. No problem. Yeah. But any attempt, whether you call it, you know, graduation or, you know, spontaneous generation, There's no evidence for it. No evidence for it. Okay. You've also, the rest of this, you know, the spontaneous generation occurred once. I mean, you not only have to believe that, you know, that it can happen, you have to believe that it did. Again, no evidence for it, but you have to believe that it is. Did you have life from non-life? Okay. And then you go through, you know, all that viruses, bacteria, plants, animals, all are interrelated. You know, they're all coming from the same thing. That protozoa gave rise to the metazoa. Various invertebrate phyla are interrelated. That invertebrates gave rise to vertebrates. And those with, you know, vertebrae, spines, and stuff like that. That within the vertebrates, fish gave rise to amphibia. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you got to believe happened, you know, crossing boundaries. Then to reptiles and the birds and mammals and man, they're all common stock. You got to believe that. You got to take it on faith because there is no evidence. No whatsoever. In fact, I didn't include it in this. I've done it before, but see if you had a... One of the things that got me in my biology class and I brought up to the teacher in my term paper is, even though they give you a timeline, I don't think they check their own timelines. I mean, you know, first of all, they had to get it, you know, they don't even get it right. The you know, biology book said life has been here 4.5 billion years. Okay, imagine 4.5 billion years, okay? And the lab manual said 4.1. You know, give or take, you know, 400,000 years, you know, well, who cares? Okay. But, you know, as you look at the timeline, basically it says, okay, this is a nice little division here. Okay, here's two sections. You make that 2 billion years. It took that long in order for life to develop, the first simplest cells to develop from non-life. Okay. Then it took another 2 billion years for the simple life to develop to something a little bit more complex cells. So now, like I said, you're either left with 1 billion or half of that, whatever, for to go from a complex amoeba to man. I mean, it took a long time just to get from the very simplest things, you know, to do something. Now, as you're getting into it, now they argue, you know, because it gets a little absurd, is that the more complex something gets, the faster it evolves. Which means that we should be seeing it happen right before our very eyes. And it doesn't. And I'll tell you, it doesn't work anyway. I mean, the more complex it gets, I mean, it starts with, you know, the more complex it, fireflies. I mean, the male firefly has to kind of, you know, do a certain little dance and, you know, flipping the lights, you know, just right, or the lady isn't going to bother with him. It's not just a matter of two of them, oh, I like you, you know, they pick each other up at a bar and they go, you know do something. It gets more complicated, reproduction. I mean, even among people, you know, you got to get through, no, honey, tonight I have a headache sort of stuff, or, you know, if you said the wrong thing or told her she looked fat in the dress or whatever, nothing's going to happen for a long time, okay? So it gets harder to reproduce, you know, the more complex you get. And this is something they don't take into consideration at all right? So anyway, it gets us that far. Now, what makes the belief of evolution an unfaithful one is that the fact that the first doctrines assimilated in Biology 101, I mean, what they tell you, cell theory, cells produce like cells. That's almost the first thing you learn. Or the Bible just says, yeah, like produces like, or each gives off after its kind. Okay, Bible goes along with good basic biology. Also, entropy, that things have a tendency to go downhill, not up. Evolution makes you, you know, supposedly get stronger, smarter, whatever. And we know, you know, this is something you can observe, things have been downhill. You know, men have a tendency to get dumber every, you know, the more science they develop, the dumber they get. And adaptation. Applying within a species, so I bring that up because adaptation are required to disregard in order to for the student to accept evolution. I mean, basic laws they lay down and go, this is immutable, this is the way things happen. Now that we've taught you that, forget it. You know, now we're going to give you evolution, which evolution is really not useful in the laboratory. It's not. All they do is send you down dead ends if you're trying to produce life or something like that. We'll get to that a little bit later. But when they bring up adaptation, there's a section in the book that I have that actually has to tell you, this is the evidence for evolution. But it's not. It's the evidence for adaptation. And you've got to know the difference, or you can put it this way, there's something called specific evolution and something called general evolution. And we very much accept specific evolution. That is, things do change within their own species. I mean, people are like this. We all got different color hair, different skin color, hair grows in different places, whatever. We adapt to our environment. All animals do. But it's already all in there. All those genes, we call the gene pool. In fact, this is what they worry about the cheetah. The cheetah has gone through two bottlenecks. That is, the population of the cheetah has almost been destroyed down to a few. And then they tried to increase it, and then it bottlenecked again when more people hunted them again. So they've lost so much of the gene pool, they're afraid if there's a change in the environment, the cheetah's not going to be able to adapt because it doesn't have those genes inside of it anymore. But it's all got to be there. God put it there to make the adaptation unless we get rid of it somehow. This is what impressed me about, you ever wonder why they give you a flu shot? And when you find out what it is, it's actually they're giving you the flu. And you go, what's that all about? Well, because the body already has within it the mechanism to fight anything that's going to come down the line. It's got all these little antibodies in it. Some are shaped like this, and some are shaped like that. There's all sorts of shapes. So when you get a flu in that looks like this, you've got an antibody that looks like that, and they go together. So they couple up. Yeah, and the body gets rid of it. That's why they give you the flu, so it starts producing the antibodies that match it. But it's all got to be there. It's nothing new. It's you adapting to the problems that you have to face in life. God's already engineered you that way. Fearfully and wonderfully made. So, we believe in this, and we believe in specific evolution. But when you take those same principles and go, this is how general evolution works, and that's what they do. They show you all these to let you know that it applies to this. That's like giving calculus to a third grade class and from it equating that the human race is stupid. It doesn't fit. It doesn't relate at all. The conclusions, are based on some that, that apply to something else. Come on. Okay, and improbable. I love this section. I really love this section. I just happened to be taking statistics at the same time I was taking biology. I incorporated this into my term paper, and the teacher goes, well, I gave you an A- because I wasn't sure of your numbers. And I go, I got it out of the statistics book. Your argument's not with me, it's with the scientist. Right? So it's interesting that another type of scientist, the statistician, I said it right, does not so readily accept the present order of the universe as the result of random chaos. Why? Okay. N.C. Wickramasinghe, something like that, of the University College of Cardiff, Wales, states that the chance of an amino acids randomly shuffling together to form the earliest prokaryotes, or the simple bacteria, is about 1 in 10 to the 40,000th power. Now, he gives an illustration. It's like a jumbo jet, or like a whirlwind going through a junkyard and assembling a jumbo jet. First of all, I want to ask you, would you ride in that thing? So the odds are so that it gets it right, that we really wouldn't rely on it. Right? But there's more. Now, the evolution is going, no. He goes, he can claim that the monkey randomly hitting a keyboard, given enough time, could eventually produce the complete works of Shakespeare. But the statistician will tell you that the length of time for that to happen, given the rules of probability, would take roughly that many years. I don't know how many years that is. That's beyond my comprehension. You know, I know there's trillion after billion because that's how much debt we're in. I'm not sure what comes after quadrillion, okay. And then something like gazillion or zazillion or something, I don't know. All I know is life has only been here 4 billion years. Right? So we don't have all these other years in order to come up with a monkey in his complete works of Shakespeare. Now, why the statistician is so skeptical is because of Borel's law of probability. It states that the occurrence of any event where the chances are beyond in one followed by 50 zeros. Okay, forget about all these billions of zeros, you know, or thousands or 40,000 or whatever. If you've got the odds at 10 to 50, the statistician knows with certainty it'll never happen. Never. Not now, not ever, never. Right? No matter how much time is allotted, no matter how many, you know, conceivable opportunities could exist for the event. Won't happen. Now, remember that. 50 zeros. Up until that point and beyond it, it just won't happen. Okay? The late Carl Sagan, you know, brain that he was, you know, in his pompous arrogance, gets on TV with this little show, you know, wrapping everything in pretty little pictures, and estimated the chance of life evolving on any given single planet, like the Earth, is one chance in 10 to the 2 billion zeros. And wasn't he proud at that moment? He didn't know Borel's law, that he just, you know, trashed his whole theory. Because it went on beyond 50 zeros. Okay. What some of the experts say, Sproul, Gessner, Loxley concluded, the fact is, however, we have a no-chance creation. We must erase the one which appears above the line. People go, well, there's one chance in, and they look at, instead of like, you know, the gazillion zeros, they look at the one. And so there is a chance. And they're saying, don't look at it that way. There is no chance. What are the real chances of a universe that created, you know, by chance? Not a chance, okay? Chance is incapable of creating a single molecule, let alone an entire universe. I mean, think about it. You know, we look at probabilities and stuff. What are the odds? Okay, so you've got a billiard table, pool table. I need pockets in this thing. So you got a pool table. You got all the balls, and okay, what's the probability of a cue ball coming randomly out of whoever knows what angle, hitting all the balls on the table, and all of them spreading out and all going in the pockets? You know, we think of those kind of odds, you know, in Vegas and whatever. The problem is, okay, you know, you can get the kind of chance or statistics or whatever if you've got everything set up, but chance won't make the random cue ball. It won't make the other balls. It won't make the table. It won't make the pockets. It's not there. What are the odds when you've got in the middle of deepest space absolutely nothing? There's nothing to bank it off of. There's no ways to figure the science or whatever because there's nothing. There's nothing. Yeah. What are the odds of chance or the odds of something happening? Well, there you go. You put it that way, nothing. There's no first cause. There's nothing to put into motion, you know, because there is nothing. How does nothing create something? I mean, think about it. If you can, evidently the science doesn't. You know, he starts in the middle. We're asking you to, let's go to the very beginning. When you've got nothing, how do you get it all started? You know, in our arrogant science. I kept thinking of a joke that Al put in the Young People's Bulletin one time about scientists and God were talking, and the scientist was saying, we've been able to create life in a test tube and all this kind of stuff like that. And goes, yeah. And God goes, yeah, really, uh-huh. And he said, well, show me. And so the scientist starts to scoop up some dirt, to make man out of dust. And God goes, get your own dirt. Yeah. Why not? Well, chance is no thing. It is not an entity. It has no being, no power, no force. It can't affect nothing, for it has no causal power within it. It has no itness to be within. I mean, you can't have something in it because there's nothing there to have it in. Bottom line, anything beyond the 50, even closely approaching it, forget it. In evolution, I mean, the scientists are digging their own dirt with their big numbers. Yeah, I think we're through with this. Yes, okay, for now. Bring your things back, the next 3 sessions. Although we do have probably enough to, if you forget. This is what we've been putting on the back of some of these things. But let me have you approach this slightly different. Okay, what does science hope to get out of this theory of evolution? Where are we going with it? Let me tell you something. If they're talking about evolution, they're talking about millions of years. How'd you like to see some effect right away? Okay, go back to adaptation. Isn't this what God's trying to do to us? He said, why don't you believe in me? I've shown you what I can do. Believe it. Yeah? Forget about the way you're going. Why don't you go the way I want you to? Yeah? Confess that I know what I'm doing and that you've got some problems that you need to fix. Okay? In fact, we can fix your past by washing away your sins, and we can give you a clean slate for the future. Now, what are you going to do with that future? Okay, yeah, you can serve God, walk in the light, and please Him. But also, like we've been talking about, you want to see adaptation? You want to see change? You want to see a good evolution? Try doing what's right and watch yourself evolve. Now, in this life. I mean, this is one of the big proofs for Christianity. It still works. It still affects people. It still changes people that give themselves over. When you let God in your life, what are the possibilities? Noah walked with God. Okay? When the worst disaster that ever hit this planet occurred, who lived? The one man that walked with God. Who was the strongest man you know of that ever lived? Samson? One of those guys that walked with God. Who was the wisest person you ever heard of? Solomon, as long as he walked with God. Who's the most patient person you've ever heard of? Job, as long as he walked with God. If you want to be strong, able to face anything, like Enoch, walk with God. And Enoch just kept walking with God. He didn't have to die. He just kept walking with God. As long as you're with God, interesting things occur. And in fact, if you like them all rolled into one, aren't you trying to be like Christ? Isn't Christ the strongest person you ever heard of? Stilled the storm. Healed anything. Even came back from the dead. Wisest person? No philosophy or religion could stand against what he thought, what he taught. It still survives. You really want something up in this life? Go with God. Listen to the call. Give in to him. And he promises, you ain't going to believe what's going to happen to you. Won't you come as we stand and sing?